time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Wonderful day here. You should see the rain as it comes down on the Poly and driving in, the sun peeking through the clouds. Makes for a beautiful day. Anyway, got lots to talk about as usual. You know me, there's things that don't want to sound repetitive, but big issues requires a big block of time. And what we're going to be talking about, revisiting Kauai again to talk about the proposed dairy by the Hawaii Dairy Farms, and they're at near Poipu. And we're going to go along that coast there and talk about the various issues. And again, I have Miss Bridget Hammerquist, who is involved in the, we won't call it a fight. And let me just lay out some things. You know as well as I know that we are in, let me go back. On the map, we're here in Hawaii. And in Hawaii, we know there's political corruption, lethargic politicians that are corrupt, people that are just in the system to earn a living, and if you can get away with it, I guess the nature of the beast is do that. But the reality is, where all of this is taking place is a fragile environment with all the human issues and the human concerns, and we talk about endangered species and other protected species, but taking a greater look at that and looking at it, and we can conclude that this is our home. This is where we live. So concerns of when we propose actions, dairies, industrial sites, communities, homes, recreation, part of that process you include the impacts, both positive and negative impacts, and you try to mitigate that. And so what I'm interested in this program or this process of the dairy and the obtaining permits, we are discovering that the state of Hawaii, those bodies responsible for regulating, authorizing, granting permits, monitoring, are not doing a good job. And that's expected because we are, again, here in Hawaii. For some reason, we've come to learn that if you think you can find corruption somewhere, go to Hawaii and you'll find it. If you think you can find people that are not going to do their job and will misrepresent information, go to Hawaii. But we hope through this process, like yourself and me and this radio show and other efforts, that we bring transparency. And that's what we're going to try to do today. So that's why I'm revisiting this whole process. And I have Ms. Hammerquist on the line now. Good morning, Bridget. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, Carol.
Thank you for joining me again. I know you got many other things to do, but this one here seems to be something that is going to affect us all, not just that community. And so I'm hoping through your conversation with me today, we reach out to other people in the islands and around the nation to support this effort and to, at minimum, make sure that this process is properly vetted and there's transparency and the rules are followed and federal rules are observed and complied with. So you're with Friends of Maha Ulepu and you had a community meeting on Thursday.
Yes, we did.
And tell us, give us a little bit background on you had already spoken here with me on the show before, but let's give them an update and revisit who you are and what your efforts are and concerns.
Sure. You may have some listeners who didn't have the benefit of hearing the other show. I'm part of one of many citizens on the South Shore and throughout the island. Actually, we have people that joined Friends of Mahalapu that are way on the northmost end of the island, and basically were people that responded to notice of a large industrial dairy that is proposed for Mahalapu Valley, just 0.8 miles from the Mahalapu Beach, which is kind of the start of the South Shore coastline. There's Mahalapu Beach, then Shipwreck Beach, then Brenneke Beach, then Poipu Beach, then the beach at Sheraton. So that's our coastal community where tourists come and islanders enjoy. I think we have as many islanders on those beaches any weekend as we do visitors.
Mm-hmm.
And Mahalapu is especially precious. It's like a jewel to the local people because it's one of the few areas that doesn't have a resort. It doesn't have a residential community. It's fairly much in a wilderness state, and you've seen it, Carol. I understand you went down there with some of the friends of Mahalapu and toured. And it's just absolutely breathtakingly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a there's a cave there that's had the top of it fall in many, many thousands of years ago, and it formed a sinkhole that's 30 foot deep with mud. And it's been dubbed, I think, appropriately so by the Garden Island as a clear view into our past. It's been an active archaeological site and dig now for over 25 years. They've found plant remains that date back 10,000 years. There's gourds and early Polynesian cultural practices evidence that date back 700 years. So they are constantly finding things in the cave. We know that there are ancient Hawaiian burial grounds in Mahalapu Valley. It was also the site of the one historic battle where Kamehameha was actually defeated. I don't think he was defeated in any other battle except at Maholapu. He had come to try to conquer the island, even though he had given some prior assurance that he wouldn't. And in the course of coming ashore, fortunately for the island, he did hit a storm and lost some of his troops through the storm, but then made it to the beach. And the Kwai warriors basically decimated the remaining force and allowed the king to go. They allowed him to live. But for the islanders, that's a really proud part of the island. You know, it's gorgeous. It has a huge mountain range, really crystal clear waters. You can see the reefs there just through the waters because there's nothing there to really add debris or much in the way of rubbish. It's very, very clean. It's a long, white, sandy beach that spreads for a couple of miles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our jewel, and she has a heiau and petroglyph rocks. There's a whole petroglyph bed there. We have a store in town called Pohaku's, and the owners there are very much into Kaloa and this whole South Shore community. And some years ago, they got pictures of the petroglyphs, which only show up after major storms. The sands move, and you can see the petroglyph beds, and they're really large. And there's a book in their store that they'll allow people to look at with the petroglyphs. And they have made some local prints on T-shirts and other items of the petroglyph patterns from ancient Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a real popular place to visit.
Right, and there are a couple of issues, things that I would like to point to. We'll just openly discuss them, and there is this notion that the community or the people that are involved is NIMBY, not in our backyard. And I going there, watching this, and seeing the magnitude of the potential impacts and where the location is, isn't it more about not causing problems and harm and trying to mitigate the impacts, the negative impacts on some of the last remaining clean beaches, the ocean water, and what have you? Isn't it beyond the and more important things than just not in our backyard? Because you've said you're not against the dairy and dairy farming. It's just this particular location. Is that correct?
Oh, it's absolutely correct. It's not a not in my backyard issue at all. We have a general concern for the health and well-being of the environment and the public along that coast.
Mm-hmm.
the waste that these animals will produce, the starting herd is, are going to produce 3 million pounds of manure a month.
Mm-hmm.
When they expand to 2,000 cows, which is their plan, and in their most recent press release on November 26th, they used the phrase within months. They will go from 699 to 2,000. They've always wanted to be around the 2,000 mark. That's where they have the profit point that they want to meet. When they have a herd that size of 2,000, the monthly output of manure is 8,500,000 pounds, and the urine is 600,000 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a massive amount of waste. In the startup herd, it's 3 million pounds of manure and 210,000 gallons of urine per month. So when you take that kind of waste, and you're 8-tenths of a mile from the coastline, and it's a downslope to the coast, and it's an area that gets heavy rains, it's an area that has a big mountain range behind it. Haupu gets a black cap on it pretty regularly. People take their laundry in based on the, whether or not a cap forms on that mountain, because they know that we're going to have rain that day. And it's tropical. You know, it gets over 45 inches a year, and some of them are really hard storms. So that's, you know, just, and the clay in there. The clay in there, Carol, is almost 66% of the farm site. It's all been mapped out by the Natural Resource Conservation Service. It's clay-based soil.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't perk. It's going to sit on the surface. It won't go in. It'll have to dry and absorb over time and have the grasses take it up. But if anybody's ever ridden horse in cattle pasture lands, they know how long the cow pies last. They last quite a while, even with the grass eating them and taking them in as nutrients. They do last on the ground. So when it's that close to the ocean, that's the big issue. It's the location. None of us, I don't think, who formed on this started with a not-in-my-backyard philosophy at all. But what we did do was we heard them. We went to their community announcements about the dairy. We listened. And then we started to think, okay, all right, it's a nice quiet valley, maybe, but let's look at this. And then we got into how much waste they produce per cow per day, 143 pounds per cow per day. I mean, I remember a friend saying to me, oh, why are you so concerned? And I told her, and she said, oh, they can't make that much poop a day. And I said, Google it. Go on the Internet. Check it out. And she did, and she called me up, and she said, oh, my God, you're right. They could even make more than that. I said, yes, they can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been our biggest concern. Too much waste and a toxic product, too. Cow manure is a toxic product. Filled with bacteria, filled with nitrogen, phosphorus, ammonia, things that if there's too much of it, too concentrated in one area, it can really hurt the earth, it can hurt the water, the fresh waters of the state, it can cause algae blooms in the ocean and wipe out reefs in no time at all.
And we see that some of the major tests now is nitrogen, the volume of nitrogen, or percentage of nitrogen posing the threat to coral reefs and ocean temperatures, right?
Yes, and that's been a concern of the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Bill Isla actually commissioned a particular study and directed funding to help save the reefs on Kauai, because we do have many beautiful beaches and many beautiful reefs. Some of them are now gone. They've died from other, we had a huge landslide, for instance, and that Pfluger event, and we lost some reef from that. And so we've had our catastrophes. We know the vulnerability of the reefs, and we don't want to see that happen again. So what we'd always advocated was just a different location. Wrong size, wrong location. It's not a not in my backyard. It's a let's put it in a safe place. And, you know, this is not unique to Hawaii. The state of Washington has had a tremendous problem with dairies, and the EPA has worked with the state, and they are now moving the dairies away from waterways. They had to close the shell fishing beds. It's impacted salmon. They know in New Zealand, where dairies they've been around 19 years in New Zealand. They started this, what they call the white gold rush, about 19 years ago. And if people go on Google and seek out New Zealand water quality, they'll get hundreds of articles because it's a nationwide pollution problem right now in New Zealand. Water degradation is huge there. There's some local governments, like county seats, that are spending $50 million a year right now in cleanup, trying to restore their water quality. They have many, many freshwater streams and beaches that are posted, enter at your own risk, not safe for human contact. And we've had members of our hui that have been there personally, came and testified to these things at our public meetings. So our concerns are not because we're some rabid element. This is a real problem. Mm-hmm. The other problem that we were educated by an entomologist on island, he's a gentleman who happens to be the editor of the journal in entomology called Insect Lore, was an industrial entomologist, and before I got involved in this, I didn't even know there were such things. But he basically worked with dairy farms in California, had firsthand experience, and he said, you're right to be concerned, and here's one of the other things that is going to happen. And he explained that because of their rotational grazing method, where they concentrate the entire herd on 24 to 27 acres a day, there's going to be a concentrated collection of waste because they plan to leave the manure on the ground where it falls. That concentrated collection of waste is going to attract flies. Flies lay anywhere between 300 and 1,000 eggs per fly. So he said within months, you'll have billions of flies. And these aren't your house flies. These are the animal livestock flies, and they're biting.
Mm-hmm. We have Dr. Carl Berg, I think, on the line. Let me
Catch
him in. Hold on. Good morning, Dr. Berg. Are you there?
I am here.
Thanks for joining in. You're with the Surf Rider Foundation?
Kauai Chapter.
Kauai Chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. And you're quite active in this this matter, or this situation, right? And
yes.
The placement of the dairy. So feel free to chime in and give your comments, if you like.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Dr. Carl Berg. I'm a marine biologist, ecologist, and the Surf Rider Foundation Kauai Chapter got involved with this issue immediately after the public meetings that Kauai Dairy Farm held, because we realized that that amount of cows could have a major impact upon our streams, and most importantly for Surf Rider, our nearshore waters. And so we started sampling the water of Waiopili Stream off of the dairy farm area in March, in order to set a baseline for how clean it was before the cows showed up. But what amazed us was the bacteria counts in the stream and in the ocean water right there were extremely high, higher than anything I had ever seen on Kauai, and as high as what is found in the Alawai Canal. This was just outrageous. And so I did not know what was causing it because there were no cows there yet, although the Hawaii Dairy Farm had begun grubbing and grading and cleaning and planting and stuff. So I contacted the Department of Health, Clean Water Branch Monitoring Division, and suggested that they look into this because this was a serious public health issue. And back in July, that was in March, back in July, they did do water sampling, and in fact, they confirmed the extremely high counts that we had been finding. And they also did DNA tests and suggested human factor was there, such there may have been some human impact. However, they did not post the area with warning signs like they had the Hanalei River many years ago, or the Alawai Canal, or just recently Kahului and the big problems of water pollution they have there. So with the help of some students from University of Southern California and University of Georgia and local, we were sampling the ocean water and the stream water throughout the summer, and the average geometric mean count for the Enterococcus bacteria, which is the state's guideline, was 9,000, over 9,000, the mean, and it should be, for those waters, around 35. So I approached the owners of the land, Grow Farm, and also Department of Health, and requested that they put up warning signs to warn the public that this water was heavily polluted with wastes. The Department of Health refused, and Grow Farm has refused to put up any warning signs, but they have done further testing and have found and confirmed that the counts are as high as 17,000 in that area. They also found the other indicator of human pollution, Clostridium perfringens. So what we have here is a major problem that the waters coming from the dairy farm area, from Grow Farm property, are heavily polluted already before the dairy farm brings in any cows. And so the very few animals that are up there, maybe 50 cattle or something, they are already having a major impact. And so I can just not imagine what will happen when we have 8.5 million pounds of cow manure on the ground when those cows arrived. And one of the things I did in discussing this with the health department and the Environmental Protection Agency was try to address the Hawaii Department of Health's claim that animal manure, animal poop, is not bad. It's not doesn't cause infections. It's not a public health risk. And I found that the EPA commissioned and came out with official guidance based upon scientific studies that cattle manure is, in fact, just as dangerous for carrying diseases that affect humans as is human manure. So in light of this, I have extreme concerns about what will happen when the dairy comes in, because the whole drainage pattern from the dairy is into this little Waikele stream and then down a very short distance into this beautiful ocean area. And as you know, Carol, the Department of Health is totally reticent about putting up any warning signs. And we have other streams on Kauai that we have been monitoring for years. Waikomo Stream at Kōloa Landing, the Willy Willy Stream, Hanamaolu Stream, that consistently, year in and year out, have counts, geometric mean counts in the thousands. And Hanamaolu was at one time rated one of the tied for the 10th most often polluted stream in the nation, yet the Department of Health doesn't do anything about this. Mm-hmm. And one last thing that was interesting is we tried to figure out where possibly could human bacteria come into the system. And a local community member said, well, I see sewage trucks driving down back in that area. And when I asked the Department of Health, I discovered something that I never knew and my neighbors never knew, that there was a sewage sludge dumping site not very far and uphill from this stream. And this, in fact, was a permitted one by the Department of Health, and it receives sewage sludge from four different sewage treatment plants, including as far away as Princeville. But it's right on the slope of a cinder cone with lava tubes and cinder underneath it. And so that became a really major concern of us, that this was, in fact, polluting it. Mm-hmm. But the Department of Health sent one of their members out, and they walked the area and looked at the area and assured us that, no, that was not the problem, although they did not do any testing or dye testing or anything, and continued to say, oh, it's just an animal problem. Mm-hmm. So here we are. We started testing back in March when the dairy farm first announced to us that if the cows were coming, they had all their permits, et cetera. And here we are saying, as Bridget said earlier, that this is not the most appropriate place for an industrial size dairy farm, right on a stream, right by the coast. And we think that it's not a not in my backyard period problem, but there were places where this could go, Mauka, near the mountains. And at the public meeting, we asked, how did this become your first choice? And they say, it wasn't. It's our second choice. And we found that the first choice, which is up by the highway, in fact, really would have been probably a very suitable place for this dairy farm, because there are no stream areas. There is no major ocean beach right there.
No residences.
And there's no residences. So we're now hoping that through the EIS process and providing them all the data that Surfrider has collected over the past 9 months, that they will see that this is not a place that is suitable. It will have a major environmental impact, and so it should be relocated to some other place on the island. I'd be glad to answer any questions you or your audience might have.
Yeah, if anyone out there have questions, has questions, 524-1080, welcome to call in. You know, speaking of this not in my backyard matter or view, let's see. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question for the guest?
Yeah, it seems like you have your solution. Go to the first place, but if they did wicked to us, I'm going to suggest that we think globally and act locally. These corporations, they only worry about cost-effectiveness, efficiency, maximizing profits, leading to shortcut poor choices. I suggest running a concurrent hemp farm for medical marijuana and illegal marijuana to export to Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. I would hope the doctor might be able to address a concurrent hemp project along with the dairy and get stuck in the second choice.
Thank you. Any comment?
I think that there are lots of wonderful uses for our agricultural land on Kauai. We have so much land left over after sugar went out of business. And I think it's very appropriate to look at all of those things. And I think we should also look at food sustainability, self-sufficiency on the islands of Hawaii. Looking at
a global
approach, I would like to just say, you know, the cattle are one of the most consumptive from water and feed. They're one of the most consumptive, and they produce huge amounts of methane. And so as far as global climate change and just self-sufficiency, this is not a good idea.
Also, we should share with listeners and that gentleman that this valley, because of its clay soil, actually was the home to and still has a wonderful taro farm, because the clay is so ideal for, it's a bowl and it holds moisture, it holds water, and so it's got a lot of taro patches in there now, the Haraguchi Taro Farm, but at one time the whole valley, I know the Hawaiian people in the late 1800s had huge potatoes, sweet potato farms in there, Carol, and they shipped sweet potatoes all over the United States from that little valley. So it can have wonderful food production because there is an adequate amount of rain, and if they get a crop that does well in that soil, like the potatoes or the taro, it would be ideal without harming the coast or the ocean or the reefs outside.
Well, in walking the beach the other day in the mouth of the river, I was a little saddened. And again, hopefully the Hawaii farmers would call in or give us a call. The dairy farms, the people there, there are a couple of things. I saw this brown scum floating on the water. Now, you know, there's ocean foam when the waves crash against the rocks and pluck at the soils, and you'll get some foam, but it dissipates. It doesn't have a staining. This material is consistent that you see in sewage treatment plants, the same textures, the same coloration, the same. I mean, looked like a milkshake of sort. And then I'm posting pictures of that on carolcox.com if you want to see them. And then see the stark contrast of this beautiful beach, not just because it's eye candy popping beautiful, but that means there are other species, there are fish, and the quality. But here's what, as you guys have already spoken about, the failure of the disregard for human health and welfare on the part of the state health department, refusing to post signs. If they have knowledge that these things are present, these pathogens or bacteria are present in such high numbers, they have an obligation, a moral, a legal obligation to inform the public because it constitutes a release. And why then, there will be pictures you can see of people that I've taken, people walking in the water, unsuspectingly getting contaminated. And the state is, I'm told now, in third hand, that the reason that they won't post this particular stream, the Waipili stream, is that they don't want to give the impression that the Hyatt, something to this effect, the Hyatt Hotel, the Grand Hyatt, is getting an upper hand on the proposed dairy developer, which is, I was trying to find and look through the dictionary of my thesaurus for a word, and the only thing that I could come up with was just stupid. It's wrong when you jeopardize people's lives and you subject, and little babies now, we're not talking about grown-ups, there were also babies sitting in the sand right where this sludge or this gunk is floating up on the beach and being deposited by the waves. And again, it's not necessary. I think the state is really derelicting their duties for political reasons. And whatever those reasons are, Abercrombie, my message to the state health department and the state, all the other state agencies involved, Neil Abercrombie is no longer the governor. There's a new governor. Old tricks are for old ways. They're gone now. So let's start anew. You need to post the signs. You need to inform the public. You need to work with the community that is in opposing this, as well as the one you're going to work for, giving them the back door, allowing them to come through the back door, whatever you do for special treatment. That has to cease. The reality is, it's something that I observed yesterday. It seems that, you know, we talk about environmental justice. You know, you hear me talk here on the show. Those people that have little or nothing should be protected from environmental injustices. But now the shoe's on the other foot. It seems that the people that are successful and struggle and worked and jeopardized things in their families to accomplish and acquire monies and build nice homes, they're going to be punished by simply being successful.
Well, and you know,
and that's a sad commentary. You because you have a nice house now, you just don't want it because it's in your backyard. No, it's not a reward for, you know, success is success, and you should be, whether you have $10 billion or $10, you should be protected by the government from poor choices of environmental degradation and impacts. Basically, that's it.
People talk about, you know, well, if there's only been, you know, 50 or 100 or 150 cows in there, where's this all coming from? And one of the pieces of the puzzle that we were able to uncover through a question and answer session we had with the representatives from the proposed farm, they attended a Lihue Business Association meeting the end of March, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And people in the audience asked them, you know, because they were proudly saying, We've cleared the drainage ditches. We've widened them. We've cleaned them out, and the old sugarcane drainage ditches are opened up again. And we're, you know, preparing our pastures. And you know, yes, there's some feral animals in there, and there've been some cows in there, but we're getting it all cleaned out. And so, someone in the audience asked, "Well, where do the drainage ditches drain?" And I mean, it had to be asked three times before the representative finally just said quietly, "To the ocean." So that is our big dilemma. That's really our concern.
Mm-hmm.
The poop is a land application. That's what's intended. They're going to leave it on the pasture. 10% of it that falls in the barn and on the raceways, they want to wash into effluent ponds. But that's only 10% of it that's going into the effluent ponds. 90% is going to be on the ground and sit on the ground, to fertilize the pastures.
Mm-hmm.
And then that which goes to the effluent pond, they said they're going to irrigate the pastures with. They're going to spray it back over the pastures. The sludge and manure solids that collect at the bottom of the effluent pond, those are going to get pumped every 30 to 45 days onto the pastures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and where are the pastures? Well, you can look at their maps. We've got aerial photography. We've got drone photographs. We've got helicopter photographs that show these ditches that they've restored are approximately 8 to 10 feet from their main raceways where the cows are going to walk. And they poop as they walk. And it rains, and the poop liquefies. It'll go into the ditches. Where do the ditches drain? They drain to the ocean. Now, they said, we're going to build berms. We're going to build large berms, move dirt around. Well, that's bothering the Hawaiian people, too, because there's so many burial sites in there. Mm-hmm. There's so many historically significant archaeological structures in there. And we got a report back from the Department of Land and Natural Resources, their state historic preservation division, they call it SHPDA, and they pointed out to the dairy farm, even the old cane mill structures that were in there are historically significant because cane is now gone. And they said, we don't really want those bulldozed and buried and covered and not protected because there's only, you know, the whole ditch networks that they used to use, there's only so much of it left to be seen. And they wanted the dairy to know that, yes, the ancient Hawaiian sites absolutely have to be protected and preserved. But, you know, you can't really open up and move around. And that's kind of the way they've been operating, though. They go in there and do it, and then somebody comes along and says, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be doing that yet. So
it's the same thing here about the well drilling.
Yes.
And what we found was they made a claim that there was really no wells nearby and we didn't have a problem. And we discovered that they had not even discussed with the county of Kauai how many drinking water wells were in the area or how close they were to their proposed sludge dumping sites up on the hillside there from the cattle and where they're going to spray it. But they never even bothered checking in about the wells. And they have said that they're not going to proceed with any more work while they're doing the EIS, but suddenly we noticed that they, in fact, were out there drilling wells. And they did not have any permits to do those wells.
Mm-hmm.
So they had, again, ignored the whole legal process and just went ahead and started drilling wells, etc. But the bigger problem with water pollution, it's the groundwater pollution from the nutrients that could get into that ground drinking water and the shallow water that goes out into the ocean. It's the bacteria and viruses that could come washing off the land, off the surface of the land and into the stream. But the whole combination of these puts a major public health risk through the waters and to the ocean waters. And that's what Surfrider's concern is, and my concern. It's not about the problem with the biting bugs or the smell or anything like that. It's simply that Surfrider is concerned about clean water and beach access, and this is undoubtedly, it has already been polluting the ocean. Now, we have to remember that the Hawaii Dairy Farm took over that property in January through a lease with Grow Farm, and they went ahead with non-permitted rubbing and grading and planting and probably fertilizing the soils. And what we're finding, because we were out there in March, every single month, we're finding high levels of nitrates, phosphates, ammonia, total nitrogen. We're finding these high bacteria counts consistently. So any of their best management practices that got permitted through exemption of ag permits through the county have been violated, and I think the very high levels of nutrients and bacteria and sediment in the water shows that the NPDS, the National Pollution Elimination Discharge System, permit is required, and I would really hope that the EPA and the Department of Health would go look at them and reforce them to get an NPDES permit.
Let's get a call here, Hope. Caller, turn your radio down or something. You got to come in a question?
No, I was just going to add, Carol, that's especially true because as we got into this, we contacted the Department of Health to learn what the well was that appeared on one of their diagrams, and they didn't really talk about this county well other than to say it was more than a half mile, which would be over 2,600 feet from the dairy. When we contacted the county water department, they said nobody's called us, and they said, you know, it's actually not more than 2,600 feet. It's about 700 to 750 feet from the well, and they said we haven't even talked to the dairy. And by the way, there's two other wells there, one also within the 750-foot range from where they're going to desludge their manure, their sludge pad. They have it diagrammed as a manure and sludge pad right adjacent to the well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized in thinking, well, they didn't even include the Gillen House well, which is also close, and they never mentioned to the state that there's a private residence there. There is one private residence there that's very close to the farm as well.
Right.
So, you know, those are areas of concern. But those three wells, Carol, they provide the drinking water for all of Poipu and a lot of Kaloa. So they are, there is very real concern here. This is not just, and we feel like, what if we hadn't read these things? What if we on our own didn't go to the county? And, I mean, I remember the day that we called the engineer at the county water department, and he said, what dairy? Where? Yeah, he said, I'm responsible for Kaloa Wells C, D, and F. I said, D? Where's D? I never even heard of that one. And then he said, well, send me their plan, and I'll draw it on there for you. I'll diagram it. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was concerned.
Right.
And so I know the water department is now working with the dairy, and we went in and met with them, and they're going to require the dairy to... they're making some comment to them about things they need to do.
Right.
But we're like coming from the back end, and is this a not in my backyard? No.
We
hadn't looked into this. We feel that our drinking water is totally at risk right now,
right.
And we don't feel protected at all on that front.
We have a caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead with your comment and question, please.
Real quick. For the doctor, he says they're running tests of the water. Beach water, and they said it's contaminated. Which labs are they using to? This was a person from the Surf Rider Fund. Which labs are they using for testing the waters, and what are they finding as far as the level of contamination, as far as coliform and so?
Did you just join us?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because he's already shared that. But go ahead if you would, Dr. Bird.
Sure. I personally test for EnteroAlert bacteria, which is the criteria for recreational waters nationwide. And I use the exact same test techniques that the Department of Health laboratory here in Lihue uses. During this process of testing, because there was discrepancy in some of the values, the Department of Health split samples and had them sent to the water quality lab of the city and county of Honolulu in addition to doing their own testing, and then I myself have done our testing. And the values are comparable. The other aspects, the nitrates and phosphates, ammonia, all of that samples I sent to national laboratories to have them tested, and one of them is California Environmental Lab. So I had a private independent lab that's certified to do our tests for the nutrient analysis.
So then you have your own personal lab to do the testing for the E. coli?
Only for the Enterococcus bacteria.
So you have your own lab?
It's something called IDEX Technologies. It's a defined substrate technology, and this is used... And it is certified as a means for testing for that in Europe and nationwide by EPA. It's one of their approved methods. So I'm using EPA-approved methods.
What is the minimal level for EPA standards for, say, beach water?
For the beach water, the minimum detectable level, because I dilute the samples, it's 10 bacteria per 100 ml.
What kind of bacteria?
It's Enterococcus bacteria. No, that's all we test for with this defined substrate.
Which is the
standard in Hawaii Administrative Rules, Chapter 343.
Okay.
You know, my understanding was the EPA standard for enterococci is 35 per 100 mil and 126 coliform per 100, because I used to work in the bacteriology lab, and we used to test the beach waters at Waikiki and all that. But we don't want to test the water at Kuhio Beach because it would probably be too contaminated, and I don't think the state would want to close Kuhio Beach and Waikiki. So that's all I'll say. Thank you.
You're right. Over the years, we have dropped the E. coli test because there's so much natural E. coli growing in the waters. And so for recreational waters, not drinking waters, but for recreational waters, the standard is the Enterococcus bacteria. And a single water sample should have less than 104 bacteria in it. And the geometric mean of five samples or more, as like you said, should be 35. So my geometric mean of 19 samples over this past 9 months is 9,006, I believe, or 9,005.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not talking about, it's a little bit polluted. I'm talking about 260 times the allowable limit.
Right. Well, thank you. Is there anything else for this hour? Because we're going to close this hour and open up next after right at 10. You want to stay on or join in, call back?
I'm going to sign off and get on. Going to teach a class about water quality.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Berg, Dr. Carl Berg.
Thank you, Dr.
You're welcome.
Berg.
All right. Now, some of you, the Hawaii Dairy Farms, I'm trying to follow up on something and confirm, and I'm going to be reaching out to Amy Hennessy. And some of the questions I have is that she told Chris D'Angelo of the Garden Island, and in an article December 9th, 2014, that she would not be able to make the public meeting that the Mahalepu was putting on. And there are some suggestions, or members that attended that meeting suggest that they observed her at that meeting as well, but making no public comment. So we're trying to confirm all of that. But boy, if that is true, not a significant factor, but then it adds to the concerns that I have. If the state has knowledge that streams are polluted, human fecal matter, and unwilling to post signs, and all of that, and then this is about openness and conversation and speaking out, and the public that is interested in not building a fight against this, but just becoming informed. If they're unable to get a straight conversation, then who do we trust in this process? And we're learning again that the state health department is dragging its foot. As its feet, I say, because they're two-legged animals. So the problem here is that if any of this bothers you, you have a right to be concerned, because we talk so much about preserving agricultural land and producing food, but milk, and it's going to cost, it's less, it's going to impact our... One person called me and said, well, on Maui here we have dairies and the milk is high, the cost of milk is high. So I don't know, where do we start? But
well,
anyway...
The dairy farm has said publicly on many occasions that it's not going to lower the price of milk in the state of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually really won't control that, because they're going to wholesale the milk to Meadow Gold. That's their current plan.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a bottling or processing plant.
Well, we're going to come back and talk about the HEPA, the Environmental Protection Process, and the EIS and what have you, and things like questions that the state should be concerned with, certain criteria. Does it substantially affect the economic or social welfare of the community or state? So things like that. We'll hash those out and just speak for them. We'll be back shortly. Thank you.
Are you there?
For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K1. For the Carol Cox Show, right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Again, you can pick this up at KWAI 1080 AM on the internet, KWAI 1080 AM. Just hit listen to our show and you can hear it live. If you have any comments or questions, 524-1080 is the number. You're welcome to call in, offer, pitch in, and help us out in this process. Now, we're talking about a matter on the island of Kauai. And it's going to, right now we're dealing with the courtroom of public opinion, trying to sort things out, and this community is struggling to just get, to be brought to the table and given an equal representation
There's activities going on at a proposed dairy site that the state is aware of. The state has been processing and communicating with the builder or the person who's proposing this and developing this dairy. But as usual, as you know now through the many occasions that I've shared with you on this show and other ways, is that the public is last to know, but it's our resources, and we should be first to know. And so we're going to talk about that. But this group, Friends of Mahaulipu, off of Kauai there, is going to need your help. And if you are interested in helping and writing letters to the governor at a minimum, or your legislators or whomever for the state, and also financial donations. They need, because when you're dealing with big money and big issues and a government that really caters to big developers and put the people's issues in the back seat, we need to come up with an upper hand. So please, we'll give you that number to the group where you can and how you can donate or donate your time or money. So I have Miss Bridget Hammerquist, who's with Friends of Mahaulipu, and talking about this issue. And there's also Mr. Billy Kaohelauli'i, and he is the significant cultural spokesperson over there on the island of Kauai. And let's welcome them back. Good morning, Bridget, again. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show.
Thank you.
And is Billy there?
Yes.
Aloha. Good morning.
Aloha.
All righty. Can you, Bridget, Billy, introduce yourself and give us a little background and your role in that community along the coast there on the island of Kauai?
Right. Okay. My name is Kaohelauli'i. I'm the moku for Wele Wele Au. Corner, South Corner District. If right in Poipu. Anyway, we from the dairy, we're just about a mile away. And everything is like the smell, the flies, and polluting. Right where they're going to dig that. They're going to put all that cow manure.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of EVs under there.
Mm-hmm.
It's all our Kapuna EVs.
Oh.
EVs.
Are you on speakerphone? You must be on speakerphone because I'm getting the feedback. And you're breaking up. You there?
Yes, I'm on speaker.
Yeah, if you could go direct because it's intermittent and it's broken up if you could.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
It's kind of hard for me. I cannot hear.
Oh.
Anyway, we live in Poipu, and whatever goes down up there is coming down to us.
Mm-hmm.
So whether the smell or the water, it goes in a river, it's polluted. Because I know it's polluted because I've been fishing out there, and I don't see any fish anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I fish there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, I think to Billy, when he first said, communicate with us, he mentioned, you know, that he's been doing sustenance fishing regularly for his family in there for over 25 years. And there has been a change since the grubbing and grading that they've noticed. And, you know, they also want to support agriculture. He said there was always agriculture in the valley, right, Billy?
Right.
But this kind of agriculture isn't like regular agriculture. This has a lot of toxins with it. So
right.
Yeah.
They've been very concerned, and they actually have their own complaint going with Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Right. That was my, Billy, with the Kupuna Evie, or for those on the mainland that's listening in, the remains of the deceased. What has the state, SHPTE, had direct contact with you or other individuals or entities that are concerned, a Native community that is concerned about that area? Have they interviewed you, talked to you, or anything?
Well, we have a good friend in there, Mary Jane. She works for the state and SHPTE, and she knows what. She's always out there monitoring her, monitoring the work they do they're doing, and so she's been reporting back to us so that we know what's coming down.
And they are recording, and are they making reports? Other than yourself, is it just a personal thing, or is it a formal notification and letters and documenting it?
Maybe Tara can explain that, because she knows more about that. Can she do that?
Yeah.
Okay, wait.
Aloha, good morning.
Good morning, Terry. What I was asking, has SHPTE, or the State Historic Preservation Department, have they found anything, and then are they communicating what they find or their observations in a formal letter, or is this just a sidebar discussion?
I've received emails, which I consider to be pretty formal.
Okay, but how, is that email then part of the official file? Is it yet just a personal communication with you, and are they reducing this information or incorporating into a formal report?
My understanding is the AIS, the Archaeological Impact Survey, that's where State Historical Preservation Division is involved. The Historical Preservation is, of course, concerned with the Kanaka Maoli and the cultural rights and objects and petroglyphs, caves, the heiau, all the items that may be in that area, which we definitively know there are. And what they had done was they had, I guess, was I would call it the draft AIS. I guess they have submitted an AIS, which we received a copy of, which has not been approved. And so it's my understanding that, again, there's some activity occurring on the property already, and that's what we had questioned. Why would there be any grubbing, grading, any type of tractor movement until that AIS has been approved? What we received just prior to the meeting was a email from Mary Jane from SHPTE that they had, in fact, were going to remove a certain area that they referred to as the paddock that had many of the cultural features in it. And prior to the meeting, we received an email, and I'm not exactly sure what the size of that acreage would be, you know, if in fact it appears to me to be, you know, more than an acre. But we considered that, you know, a small victory that they're actually acknowledging that there are areas that they should not be.
And, Terry, you should, what they forwarded, the documents they forwarded to me, Carol, was actually a response. It was a formal response back to the representative of the dairy farm. It was a response to the draft AIS, and it basically was declining to approve the AIS as presently submitted, with a list of items that the dairy then has to go back and address and take care of. So it is a formal document in answer to your earlier question.
And Terry, what in general, what are some of these emails, what are they finding there, if you would, please?
Well, my understanding is that there are petroglyph rocks and a boulder that has petroglyphs on it. We know there's heiau and caves, which Mary Jane had forwarded an email to Billy asking about it, because, again, Billy is very familiar with the area and what those represented. He was telling me this morning that whenever you had a petroglyph, it was actually like a marker for something far greater than just that petroglyph drawing, which itself is important, but it might determine that there was a burial site, a birth site, some activity that occurred there. So that's the concern, is that what we found, what do we not still know that possibly could still be there, and the space between the two, which would include on the mountainside at the back end of the valley, on the ridge line, as it's referred to. So they have started, and my understanding was that Mary Jane was going to be on site on Friday, actually, the day after the meeting. I have not received, as this is only Sunday. I would expect to have received some very current news tomorrow, okay. Carol, because she's very good.
And is this, Bridget, is this putting the cart before the horse? I mean, should they just wait till the EIS or the is approved or the...
Well, one, Carol, they didn't really even tell us that they were doing an EIS. I think if Billy and the Hawaiian people, and he is the Kona Moku for that Apawa'a of Mahalapu Valley, if they hadn't filed their own concerns with Leimana De Mate at the Department of Land and Natural Resources, I don't think any of us would have ever learned that there was even a draft architectural impact statement being done, because they haven't been public about that at all. And we were all surprised to learn that they'd submitted one in September, and that now, this month, the department got back to them finally with a real detailed letter saying, you know, it's not accepted in its present form, your AIS, it's not going to go to final, and here's why, and then set out a list of like 18 things that they need to take care of. And so, yes, I would say it is putting the cart before the horse, because if you're a responsible steward of the land and you recognize you're in an ancient valley that has a historic battle site, has all monuments, has a cave that dates back 10,000 years, that is an active archaeological dig described in the Garden Island as the most important archaeological site in the entire state. It's described as the most important archaeological dig right now in the entire state of Hawaii. And just 0.8 miles from that cave is proposed for 2,000 cows and 8.5 million pounds of manure. I mean, with one big rain, that cave, by the way, the river, the Waiopili River, runs right in front of the mouth of the cave. And when the river widens with heavy rains, it takes in debris and actually puts whatever's in the valley into the cave floor. So if it suddenly has a lot of manure, that's going to go right into the cave floor too. Mm-hmm. And so if you compound and take this beautiful area with, we've got the Kaloa duck, the endemic blind cave spider, we've got all of these beautiful plants in there that are native to Hawaii. There's a huge propagation bed in there, right, Terry, that Dr. Burney's been working on for 25 years to restore the natural native Hawaiian plants to the valley, because there were so many beautiful plants in there. And he has this huge bed. I don't know if you saw it when you were there, of all these
plants. Absolutely.
And they've been working really hard. And so this is like a living museum. That's the best way to describe Mahalapu Valley. So is it really appropriate to put an industrial dairy in the heart of a living museum? You know, would you invite it into, Golden Gate Park? Would you invite it into, you know, any Yellowstone? I mean, it's just like it doesn't fit.
Or rather than tasking them with, if they would do it in Golden Gate Park, how about just simply respecting the law and respecting the culture and do what is required and do it in a fashion that it's transparent, timely, but not do it and allow them to grade. And when I heard they were grading and grubbing, and the state health department, clean water, wastewater, and those people, no concern of theirs because it's a county approval. You know, if you're watching something go wrong, you wouldn't just stand by and let it go wrong. If you're concerned with managing the resources and people's interests and preserving cultural important areas, you would do something, right?
Well, the state is the party that's responsible for preserving culturally significant sites.
That's shifty. No, we're talking about the grading and grubbing.
Well, that's also the state, though, when you get into pollution.
I understand
our
that.
County does not police or regulate. We don't have any control over.
I was told by the state that it was the county who gave the permit for grading and grubbing.
Well, they got a permit exemption through the West Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District, so they didn't even go through the proper permitting process with the county.
Right. See, then that should be an issue. That's my point. The whole process, the state is standing back and observing this. They should, in fact, if they know it's improper, they should intervene in nothing else but write a letter. They're the experts. And say,
well, as Dr. Berg said, though, even, you know, if you get through that process that they started when we all feel they shouldn't have, we feel the EIS and the AIS should have been done, completed, approved before anything started. Okay, that's truly the way the citizens here see it.
Right.
And it only makes sense. That's putting the horse before the cart, not the cart before the horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but they did put the cart before the horse. Okay, so we're past that. But then once you found, you know, astronomical levels of pollution being carried out to sea before the animals are even there, just from what was there,
mm-hmm.
just from what they're stirring up and grading and digging and clearing, okay, that is something that's regulated by the State Department of Health. It's not regulated by the counties at all.
Right.
They don't have an enforcement division at county level. That
right.
has to be done at state level.
Right, I understand. My point was to speak, it's fragmented, and so it seems for convenience sake,
yeah.
the agency, and that's what I'm trying to point out, not trying to say what's right or wrong or what have you. It's just that the State Health Department and the State Land and Natural Resources, where SHPTE falls under, there should be strict adherence to the rules, and that should be done without hesitation. And you're right. I stood on the stream yesterday looking there at the cave, and you can see historical rising of the river where the deposits of debris is higher than the actual cave entrance. So what does that tell you? If anything goes wrong uphill, or what did they do to grade, and will it cause velocity or speed or create turbidity or undermining the lower level of the stream? Who knows? Did they address those things? But let's get back to Billy and let him finish sharing with us his concerns and a little of the historical or whatever it is that he wanted to.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, if you would.
Sustainable fishing is the most important one in the water, because if the anything goes in the water, it's going to affect all this coastline. It's going to go right down. That's why I'm afraid of that dairy to go in there, because it's going to affect the air, it's going to affect the water, it's going to affect the land.
Mm-hmm.
And if that manure goes in the ocean, it's going to kill all our fish, especially by the river. That's where we get all our small fish to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that river has to be good river. We cannot keep on letting that the polluted water go in there. We gotta stop that, you know. And we, like I said, we are downhill of that area, so everything is gonna go downhill to us.
Mm-hmm. And have you had any contact with the health department, personally, or have they?
Carol, I was just, Billy asked me to mention that we had gone to a meeting actually with the department based. In part with the Department of Aquatic Resources recently on Maui. We were by invitation. It's a project that they're working on for community-based sustainable fisheries areas, the CBSFA, community-based sustainable fishing areas. And I think there's an irony here that they have at long last wanted to consider Kanaka Maoli, the Ahamoku of the areas, to help establish a fishing area that Billy had brought up at this meeting. We need to do something immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this is, of course, due process of the government, but that's what it's about, is to... The Department of Land and Natural Resources at long last realizes that we're losing our resources. And it's far more immediate than some might even imagine how the decline is happening. So they have engaged the Ahamoku Advisory Management Council, the AMAC, to help implement this program that, of course, on the north shore of Kauai,
Uncle Tommy.
Uncle Tommy.
Hashimoto. They kind of close a lot of areas so that for sustainable fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we like to do it over here because the way we're going is we're not going to have fishing a couple more years.
And so you're concerned that...
Right now, I'm, you know, if I go fishing today, I hope I can catch some fish because, you know, you get so much people over here fishing and, you know, not monitoring. You know, they're taking more than they need. Mm-hmm. You know, they're decline our fish.
Right.
We need to do something now.
Right.
Not later.
Can you hold on? We have another caller. Hold on.
If we get more of this kind of stuff that interfere our sustained food, it's going to be hard for us.
Right. Hold on 1 second. I have a caller. Good morning, caller. Thanks for calling. You have a comment or question?
Yes, good morning. We've considered all the cause and effects of the situation. Have an environmental impact statement been prepared by the guy who's going to run the dairy and consider the whole situation? Environmental impact statement, assessment of running the dairy and the effect on the environment.
You know, because of the response from the community, sir, they finally have agreed to do an environmental impact statement. A little bit, you know, after the fact, and it's Pierre Omidyar, who lives on Oahu, that is putting in this dairy. You know, the gentleman who happens to be a billionaire, he was the former owner of eBay, he's the owner of this proposed dairy. And kind of ironically, he actually has a huge part of his interest in preserving the environment. So for those of us who are dealing with this and trying to bring to light what it's going to do, we're really surprised that Pierre Omidyar would even be behind this effort at all, because it is such a toxic waste dump that they're trying to put in the middle of this sacred valley. But they are going to do an environmental impact statement, and we are hoping, very hopeful, that if it's done honestly, that Mr. Omidyar, who hasn't responded to any of our letters, will finally be informed of these terrible environmental impacts that the Hawaiian people are now talking about, that scientists like Dr. Berg are bringing to light, individuals, other people in the community. We have a fisheries biologist that's helped us. We have an entomologist here locally who said this is the wrong place in a moist climate. You do not want this many pounds of manure. You'll have billions of biting flies. You'll have health risks. Diseases will spread. And for those people like yourself that are listening, we have a website. It's friendsofmahaulepu.org, and that's M-A-H-A-U-L-E-P-U, friendsofmahaulepu.org, all one word. If you go there, you can read a lot about our concerns. But yes, they just announced, they haven't officially filed the notice of the EIS, but they did go to the paper with a press release November 26th, stating that they will do an EIS before they construct these buildings.
Your neighborhood board, your city council, and your state legislature, can you get an independent auditor of the environmental impact statement, maybe go to the legislature and make a resolution that an independent, non-biased person does the environmental impact statement?
I think that's a really good idea. I don't know if we can do that, but I'm sure willing to look into it. I know I had some concern because when they announced they were going to do the EIS, the company that they said would help them is Group 70 International. It's an architectural firm on Oahu that actually did all of their plans for their milking barn and their calving sheds. They're architects, and they designed the plans. And the press release said that was the company they were going to go to for the EIS. So we were concerned that was a little bit, you know, close to home there to use the same company, because, you know, you kind of wonder if they're going to bring out the bad damage it'll do if they're also the people that are in it to build the buildings, yeah?
So
we will ask. I don't know the answer.
Now, Group 70, they do architectural work.
Yes, they did. They did the blueprints for the...
Why did they... And they're also
the same company that do did the waste management plan. Now, can you speak to that? Is that commonplace to this an architecture firm to do a, or did they hire or obtain a person who has expertise in waste management and just authored it, or why would an architectural firm be conducting waste management plan?
Well, we asked the state that because when we called Group 70 International, they told us that they do not do the waste management plan. They did not do the waste management plan. That they don't have engineers on staff that are agricultural engineers. They don't do hydrologic models. They don't do the types of things that would go into an agricultural farm plan. That's not... And they didn't hire anybody to do it. The woman I spoke with, Rain, was surprised that their name was on the cover of the waste management plan as the preparer of that document.
Right, but the states say they didn't do one, but yet when they the state received the management plan, it's represented that Group 70 conducted the waste management plan.
Yes, but I was at a meeting with Dr. Sina Pruder.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Hold on. Let her finish her comment, and if you would, just hold on.
I was at a meeting with Sina Pruder on October 1st, and I brought that up to the state officials that the waste management plan was somewhat misleading on the cover because it gave Group 70 International credit for developing the waste management plan. And her comment was, well, we know they don't do that. We know they were the architects on the blueprints.
Okay. Go ahead with your comment, sir, or your question.
I'm wondering if the different species in the area where the impact on the environment, the fishes, the birds, the plants, that would become extinct, or like that cultural Hawaiian said, the fishery, certain species would be gone. Could that be preserved and taken into consideration? The different species of fish, birds, plants, or whatever it may be.
Well, that's the intent. That is the intent of doing studies so you can mitigate or say no. And it's rare that in this process the state will say no, but you can have certain criteria that they make sure they hop through the hoops on. But my concerns personally... we're not going to get that and from the state of Hawaii and its land and natural resources. We're not going to get that until maybe the new governor will speak to this and issue the order. No BS. Let's get down to business and do the people's work.
Right.
Let's just see if that works because, you know, people say, well, how's he going to do? Well, here's our chance to find out. And I've suggested that... this group convened a meeting directly with the governor and informed him prior to his predecessor tolerated certain things and these things were occurring. Can there be a cessation of that practice and introduce a new open and transparent process where people don't have to fight for what's theirs anyway?
Okay, I'll listen on the radio, sir.
Hey, thank you for calling in, all right?
Glenn from Kakaako. Bye.
Aloha.
Mahalo.
Go ahead, guys, if you got any comment. And,
yeah,
and Bridget, how do people get in touch with you for making donations? We failed to give that, and we need the money, honey. No, we need to. This is a long fight. I mean, right now this is casual talking and fleshing out these issues and saying, you know, but then when it comes to court, how does the public group like yourself fund itself and fend off or fight for the environment when the state is failing to do it or when the EPA is failing? So how do people get in contact with you and can they make donations and are you accepting donations?
Thank you, Carol. We really are. We've had some wonderful contributions from people here in the community and with those funds we've used their donations to duplicate documents, get information, go to the state, fly to Oahu, have the meetings we've had, and we do need more. We just recently retained an environmental attorney on Oahu,
mm-hmm.
Linda Paul, and we're looking to her for advice, that gentleman's last question about getting an independent EIS operational at the same time they're doing their EIS. That's something we'd actually asked for of her and asked to explore, if we can hire engineers to basically go over their studies, their findings. There is some difficulty because the owner controls access to the land, and whoever does the environmental impact study does have to get access to the site. So we may be limited to just getting their data, but they do have to post all their data during an EIS process. But it is going to take money to stay on top of this and review it. And we're really hopeful that if we can get enough contribution, get enough investment into this process, we can persuade them that this is the wrong location, not so close to the shore, not on a beautiful coastline. This coastline, south shore of Kauai, the property taxes generated from this area, from all the residents who live here, provide up to 25%. Last year, they were 25% of the county's budget, the income generated from this area. So if this area is hurt and the tourist industry fails because of the odor, the flies, the poop in the water, that's going to make a real big gouge into the county's economy.
So where do they...
If people are interested,
yes,
certainly help us. We will welcome... We're going to keep a record of every donation that's received. They can send their donations to 1722 K-O... I'm going to say that again. It's Keolani. It's K-E-O-N. Keonilani. Excuse me. K-E-O-N-I-L-O-A. I'm not saying that right. Keoniloa Place. Gosh, I'm nervous. I'm sorry. 1722 Keoniloa Place, Kaloa, Hawaii, 96756, and they can address the donation letter to J-A-Y, Kechloian, K-E-C-H-L-O-I-A-N, a wonderful man in our community. He's a builder. He understands environmental issues. He really is very afraid for our entire coast, and he and his wife, Eileen, have personally donated over $20,000 that has funded much of what we've been able to do thus far. So we've opened a Friends of Mahalapu bank account at the Federal Credit Union. All the money, like I said, is recorded. Every donor's name is attached to their contribution, and we're keeping careful records. And then people, when they make a donation, if they please would send us their email address or their address, we want to put them on our mailing list so they know exactly what we're doing and exactly what we're accomplishing. But that's J. Kechloian, K-E-C-H-L-O-I-A-N, 1722 Keoniloa, Keoniloa, K-E-O-I-A, Place, Kaloa, Hawaii, 96756.
And you'll have
born and raised here. I shouldn't really.
You'll have that address posted on your website at
friendsofmahalapu.org.
Okay. And how does someone call you? Do you have some people don't have emails? What number can they reach?
They can call the local number 808-742-1037. It's 808-742-1037.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned, okay, well, thanks, and then we'll post it on our website as well. But, again, let's talk about this EA that you know, unfortunately, the public is not aware that the EAs rarely don't stop anything, generally. Usually, it goes through.
Well, that would be true maybe of an environmental assessment because it's a lesser...
right. Well,
environmental impact look, yeah.
Well, my greater point is that so we don't want to lay down on our morals and go resting when we have clear indicators that there is not transparency or lack thereof of transparency and some favoritism on the part of the state and some foot dragging. So when you have that introduced into the game, everyone has to step up their game and say to the state agencies and to the governor and to the legislators, and I would encourage you to contact your legislators and say to them, we need, if it's going to be processed and approved, we need strict
observance, and we need openness, and timeliness is key, because you only have so many days, even when it comes out and introduced and says that they completed their assessment or whatever they're going to do, and then you got to play catch up. So let's talk about some of the in like 4.1 of the HEPA, the rules of the state. In most cases, an agency determines that an action may have a significant impact on the environment if it meets any of the following criteria. You have that page with you?
Yes, I do, Carol.
Yeah, so if it involves irrevocable commitment to loss or destruction of any natural or cultural sources, resources. But in order that to take place and be a factor, we need an agency and an entity that is, like some ask, can you get an independent individual? And I share the same sentiment. I just don't trust this in-house handling of things. I'm just, over the years, I've become leery. Curtail the range and beneficial uses of the environment, if that presents a problem. And then substantially affects the economic or social welfare of a community or state. Will this project do that, Bridget?
Yes. And there's no question. There is something that everybody listening to your show can go watch, okay? It's a YouTube video called Dairyman's Blues. And it's easy to access, and it is an absolute graphic look of an industrial dairy. And it shows what the volumes of manure are like and how they're handled and what it means to the surrounding community. It is not a socially responsible agricultural use of this land.
Right.
You put this many animals in this small an area with that volume of waste, there is going to be odor.
So
it is not going to be usable. There's going to be contamination. There's a risk of death to not only the sea life, but to people, because young babies and older people are really susceptible to E. coli and Enterococcus bacteria.
So
and
this is what we're saying is, what you're saying is, I'm trying to say to the people, these are defined concerns already in existence, and you're spelling them out, being specific. Substantially affects public health. Biting flies would affect that. Wading and not being able to wade and water that, or bathe or wash or drink water that is not contaminated. Involves substantial degradation of the environmental quality. We see that unfolding in before our eyes. Walk up the stream, and you don't even see small minnows in the stream, by the way. That's what I was looking for yesterday. Hold on one second. We have a caller. Let's get their comment or question. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning. I have two comments, Carol. First, I'd like to thank you very much for covering this and everything you do for the islands of Hawaii. Somebody like you is needed so badly. My two comments are, number one is that, as Billy talked about the waters and Bridget has talked about the waters, I wanted to just make a point that Poipu Beach and Poipu area is one of the biggest destinations on the island. And if there is a big storm in Mahalapu, and if the dairy was allowed to be there, and that manure starts running down the coast, as we've all talked about, it'll all end up in that little kiddie pool that the water goes in, the waves go in, but waves do not go back out. And that's one of the cleanest spots on the islands that's just going to be ruined if anything like that happens. And number two, I'd like to make the point that Bridget brought up, that 25% of the South Shore is tax-based. Well, also, the employment. The proposed dairy has published the fact that they will have 15 jobs. They can't even guarantee that there'll be local jobs, because they've put in their paperwork that they don't know that they have qualified people on this island to work there. So 15 jobs. And the Hyatt, at this point, has 1,000 jobs. And the owners of the Hyatt, the developers, have stated that the business is already slowing down on the Hyatt, because people that book conventions are hearing on the website, on different emails and different people talking about the proposed dairy. And so they're canceling their their bookings to have big groups there. And the reason that because of that, they are already laying off people.
Mm-hmm.
So, Carol, thanks again for everything you're doing, and I'll listen from here. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Ingrid, go ahead. You there? Hello? Ingrid, are you there? Anyway, if you somehow, are you there, Ingrid? Anyway, what happens here? There's an article that was written, and the one thing worse than big dairy abuse of cows, it's abuse of workers. Someone shared this story, and it was written on December 11th, 2014, on the Alternet. And this particular, in these times of labor, it was by Joseph Sorrentino. And he quotes here, here's a quote, "They treat the cows like a person and the workers like slaves," said an employee about the dairy. This is coming from in New Mexico. New Mexico's dairies, like almost all dairies in the United States, never stop running. Cows are milked two or three times a day, every day. Cows don't know holidays, quote, says Alfredo Gomez, a 56-year-old dairy worker in southeastern New Mexico. Here there's no Christmas for the vast majority of the dairy workers in New Mexico. As most states, there are also no holiday pay, no overtime, no sick pay, no workers' comp. They work in dirty, difficult. But anyway, when we talk about New Zealand, there's issues and raisin, and I'll post a link to this story. Good morning, you're back?
Yes, hi.
All right, we
I'm
lost
not sure what happened. We had a little technical glitch there.
Probably some manure flowed over the line. You never know when it hit the fan, you know how they say.
Hit the fan.
But I was soliciting a comment from you on that. But with these, I was talking about the New Mexico situation, and I'm told that, and I, again, this is, I like to confirm everything, but actually one of the people that were at the meeting there is actually from New Mexico dairy farming industry. So we'll see if that's any truth to that too. But is individually limited, but cumulative has considerable effect upon the environment or involves in commitment for larger actions. This is talking about that 4.1. And substantially affects rare, threatened, or endangered species or its habitat. Detrimentally affects air or water quality or ambient. I kind of believe that it will have an effect on the water quality and the ambient air, the air and all. As we note in Waimanalo and Oahu, Unison Farm, they were processing waste food and growing, what do you call them, mulch and what have you, and producing mulch, and they were using cow manure and all, and it smelled the valley up, so.
And I think if the readers or listeners are interested, on our website, and actually they can actually go to the National Park website, there is a National Park survey that was done of Mahalapu. And it's a beautiful document. It's about 63 pages long, and they actually identify more than 44 either endangered or compromised species in that valley that they feel are worthy of preservation. So it isn't just the community saying it. We've actually had a National Park survey done that documented it in writing, in print, with pictures.
And it was done with the thought that it was potentially would serve as a national park, correct?
Correct. It's so beautiful. They were looking at it. It was a survey in anticipation of making that whole beachfront, and Malama Mahalapu has worked on this for years. They're another organization like ourselves that are working for the preservation of Mahalapu, and their director and our group have worked together on this effort with respect to the dairy. They've come out publicly and voiced very similar concerns about having an industrial dairy in that valley for all the same reasons we're citing, and they have been working for years trying to get Grow Farm to donate this land close to the coast and turn it into a national park. That hasn't been successful up to now, and so they've also approached potentially purchasing the property, and they're working with funding sources to try to get the money together to buy it.
Now, I go ahead.
Until that happens, you know, as one of their members said, it's not going to be worth buying as soon as, you know, there's even 3 million pounds of poo a month.
I feel like I'm dreaming or having a nightmare. You're now telling me, and I've heard bits and pieces before, that the United States National Park Service see this area as a potential national park to preserve all of the natural beauties and the historical and all of that.
Yes, and that was an effort started under Senator Inouye.
Okay, whoever.
He was very interested in.
Whoever it was, we need to go to his office and ask them, beg them. Brian Schatz then would go there. But my point is, and now all of a sudden, that falls through the cracks, unfortunately. That's a beautiful place. I mean, just the cave alone, if you get a chance to go through that cave, folks, you'll be moved.
And they have docents there on weekends that give people tours. And I don't think the tours, they don't even charge, do they, Carol?
No, they don't. But what I'm trying to get at is that so up comes along a guy with billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Now, this is my nightmare. Now, I don't know if this is a reality. But and this billionaire cares for the environment, has Blue Planet actions and all of that, and then decides that, well, you know, being that they didn't cite a park, maybe he didn't know. Maybe some of the people didn't tell him. So maybe this is an outreach. I'm talking in my sleep now that maybe he will hear this indirectly or somewhere and say, wow, I didn't know that it was going to be a national park. I got billions of dollars. I should, you know, do what's right for good people, all people, because I'm a good person. And go to the national park rather than desecrate the area with cow manure. But it's called something else, isn't it? But that's street language, I'm sure.
Well, we have tried really hard to reach Pierre Omidyar. I mean, I know he lives on Oahu. I know his kids go to school there. I don't know why. I don't know if our letters are intercepted. So many of our hui. I mean, I had people that sent me copies to say, here's what I wrote him, here's what I wrote him. And I'm sure there were people that wrote that I never even saw their letters. But I know of at least 15 letters that went directly to him, to his board, and none of us ever heard back. So I don't know if the communications director is holding all the stuff and not sharing it with him. But it doesn't make any sense, Carol. You're right. He's this Blue Planet guy. He's supposedly an environmentalist. And why he would do this to that rare historic area, it's like the most historic area on our island.
I believe that he's a good man. I believe that if you get the right communication, chain of communication with him, a line of communication with him, somehow, somewhere, penetrate. Because if in fact now, again, I don't have all the details, but everybody, I have photographs I took at the meeting saying that Amy Hennessy is there. She wouldn't announce herself, if that was her coming in and another person potentially close to that situation.
Jim Garmet, Jim, the farm manager.
Yeah. So if that is true, then maybe they are so anxious to get it through because that's their job as professionals that they're not going to share the real concerns that the community has and the Hawaiian concerns and the cultural concerns and the environmental concerns. Maybe that could be another, but I can't imagine anybody affiliated with the Blue Planet and what it stands for, organization, that would come. I would think I could see a tomato farm, but to put a cow farm.
Yeah, well, it's not really a farm. It's a factory farm.
It's a factory.
But
radio is a little different. You try to portray, you know, I mean, we could go into great details and how many square feet it is, but again, just to convey to. So I'm really concerned about that. Maybe, and then seeing the cave, and what is the name of the cave again?
It's the Makawahi Cave.
Yeah. you got to go see it, folks. If you ever go to Kauai, you got to go see it. And this isn't about in my backyard. This reality is there's a cave there that has substantial historical value and also cultural value. And it could be damaged with this activities. That's all this is. Not
it can be damaged with this activity and totally desecrated and ruined with one of our rainstorms.
Well, hold on. I'm going to entertain this last caller, but it better be quick, guys. Go ahead with your comment or question, please.
Yeah, I seriously recommend you call that Roger Christie on the Big Island and find out how good hemp can be as an industrial resource, maybe.
Why don't you call him for and have him to send us some brownies, okay? Take care. Go ahead. We got 1 minute, Bridget and Billy. Real quick. You there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, please.
I was just kind of cogitating about that last call. Actually, hemp is used to make rope as well, and some real sturdy rope at that. And there's some other industrial uses for hemp. And this valley has been designated as a place that would really grow good hemp. So I'm not endorsing the use for marijuana. I don't personally believe that in that, but it is a crop that will grow there. But I think more importantly for the island, for sustainability, let's get the sweet potatoes. Let's get the taro. Let's get, beets. Let's get some of the wonderful stuff that the Hawaiians grew in there for, hundreds of years. It's a precious place, and I hope your show, Carol, I really hope your show reaches Piero Media, because we have not reached him, and we have not heard from him, and they say that they are listening to the community, and they're going to start small, but in the same paragraph, they say within months we'll be at 2,000, which is more than they originally announced they were going to have. So.
All righty. Well, we're down to the last seconds now.
Thank you.
Billy, thank you, and Terry, thank you for
Mahalo.
Mahalo, and we'll
Mahalo.
See you again. Aloha. Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye. This is the Carol Cox Show, and
Aloha.
We'll see you next week.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu. Yeah.